Welcome, guys, to the Gridiron Gurus. I'm Keith, joined by Jesse, and a lot of things happened last week, including some coaching changes. The college football playoff rankings came out, and the conference title games happened. Heisman finalists were announced. We're going to get into all of that. First thing we're going to get into tonight is the coaching changes that have happened. We talked last week a lot about, you know, Lincoln Riley going to USC. We talked about, I'm trying to think of some of the hires that we talked about last week.
We talked about Lincoln Riley. We talked about Brian Kelly. We talked about
Billy Napier.
Yeah.
Marcus Freeman taking over at Notre Dame. We talked about all of those. So some of the fallout from that was Oklahoma was left vacant. They finalized the deal to hire Brett Venables, the DC from Clemson. And I'm going to get into that in a little bit with Clemson and what's going on there. I think we said last week with Marcus Freeman taking the Notre Dame job, he was probably the best assistant that was on the market to be hired, and stepping into the Notre Dame, stepping up within the organization was a great, great win for them. But in the same sense, we said, you know, hey, you know, Brett Venables is on the same tier. Maybe Marcus Freeman was a little bit higher than him. So it kind of is a good little foreshadowing on our account that he would take another head coaching job, and it happened with Oklahoma. I think it was a home run hire for them. He's been with Coach Dabo Swinney at Clemson since, I think, 2011. And it's really at the start of Clemson's success. Dabo took over in, like, 2008, hired Venables in 2011, and then really started rolling. So I think Oklahoma got a very good hire. It's going to depend on how well he's successful, not based on his recruiting, but who he hires as his OC. He'll obviously kind of be more in the defensive room, in my opinion. But I think Venables was a home run hire, but I'm really curious on who he will hire as his offensive coordinator, because that's really going to depend on how successful he is as a head coach. But he is in a good spot because Oklahoma is coming to the SEC in, I think, 3 or 4 years. So he has a time to build the brand that he wants before jumping into the SEC, unlike Brian Kelly, who is jumping into the SEC immediately.
I agree with that. I think that what Lincoln Riley has left behind for him, I think will be enough to propel him.
Oh yeah,
and he's a good enough coach that he should have been a head coach a long time ago. And I think that just the fact that there was just so much success at Clemson that he had no reason to leave.
Right.
And which we talked about earlier in the season. Trying to think what the first it wasn't after the Georgia loss. What was their second loss? Was it NC State?
I think so.
We talked about, is this the year that he leaves? Because we could see, you could kind of see the writing on the walls a little bit.
Right.
So I felt like it was probably going to be his time to leave. I want to know what took so long. Why did it take them so long to make the announcement, to make the hire? Everybody speculated it was going to be Venables. Everybody believed it should be Venables. Like, what took them so long to finally announce, okay, here's our coach? I don't understand why they drug their feet.
I don't know if it was contract talks or whatever. I know, like, I want to say it was like 4 days before it was actually officially announced. An Oklahoma reporter kind of leaked that out, that Venables had agreed to take the job.
Right.
And then we were all kind of like, on pins and needles, like, well, was that guy speaking out of turn, maybe released some information that he shouldn't have, or was he just speculating on his own? I actually think that he let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. He wasn't supposed to say anything, and he did. But, you know, we even talked about, you know, why Brent Venables had not left. You know, you mentioned, you know, it should have happened sooner. But I think even Venables himself had said, you know, why leave a good thing? Why, you know, we were winning national championships. Why would I leave?
Right.
I'm winning rings.
Right.
Why would I go somewhere else that I've got to build my program up when I'm being successful here, getting paid well here? And I think you're right. I think when the wheels started falling off of the wagon at Clemson this year, is he kind of seen that, hey, it may not be time to get out of here, and seen a good opportunity at Oklahoma. And I'm going to talk about Clemson just for a minute, falling apart. That's what I have wrote down, Clemson falling apart. And I don't mean that Clemson isn't, you know, next year going to go into the season unranked. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Dabo Swinney is going to make a good hire for his defensive coordinator to replace Brent Venables. But there's one thing he can't control. He lost his AD to Miami.
Right.
Dan, and I'm going to butcher this man's last name, Redkonovich.
I'm not even going to attempt it. I'm not going to attempt it. I'd take DJ Uiagalelei 10 times.
Well, this guy has been the AD at Clemson and took the job, same position at Miami. And that's something that Dabo might have a say in who they hire for the AD. It's not his final choice. It's obviously the chancellor at the university that'll wind up making that hire. It was released about, I think yesterday was when the news dropped. Offensive coordinator, Tony Elliott, is more than likely going to be the head coach of Virginia. So not only is he having to replace his OC, his offensive coordinator, and his DC, his defensive coordinator, but he's also looking at they're going to hire a new AD as well. And depending on how they do the AD depends a lot on how money is spent within the organization, within the sports department. So Clemson is, and Dabo Swinney is in a very unique situation where he does control a lot. But how he goes about this can determine his success in the next 2 or 3 years, in my opinion.
Yeah. Have you heard the rumors that are, and I don't know, I don't buy any of them, to be completely honest.
I buy into every one I see.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure a lot of people do. but if there was ever a time for it to be true, though, this is the season. But all these rumors about Dabo Swinney maybe trying to make the jump to the NFL,
I wouldn't doubt it.
I feel like this is the best time to do it, because here's the thing, I think it's stalled out. I feel like this has stalled out more than Nick Saban ever stalled out. I mean, he's finished
Saban
the season.
Really never stalled out at LSU before he made the jump.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm talking. Well, yeah, I guess that's a better comparison, using LSU. I was really referring to the Alabama with him, just because he really didn't lose assistants. He did, but he didn't lose them as often as he has at Alabama when he was at LSU.
Right.
And even at that, I'm trying to think. I can't recall if there was, and it had to be around the time when maybe Kirby Smart was making the move. I can't remember if Kirby and Lane Kiffin were at the same time. But I can't recall a time where Nick Saban has lost both coordinators at the same time.
I want to say you're right.
And
I think
know
he may have lost them both the same year.
Did he lose? Okay, well, if he did,
I can't
the only
remember.
Two I can think of that would come close would have been Kirby Smart and Lane Kiffin.
Right.
Because
if it wasn't
Kirby
the
went
same
to Georgia,
year, was,
Lane went to FAU.
Right. If it wasn't the same season, it was back to back. It was right.
But
in the
he's
same time
never
frame.
Lost both coordinators,
right.
And AD, and coming off of a 3-loss season.
Okay, so
that's a whole big chunk of stuff.
You're right. I absolutely agree. And it would be a good thing if he dropped to the NFL under one condition. It's the right job.
Right. I'm not saying he should go to the NFL. I'm
right.
just saying if there was a time to go to the NFL,
right.
Now's the best time.
Well, I mean, let's just say the Houston
but
Texans
I don't know what
fire
job,
their coach.
Right.
Would he be better off in the Texans organization versus Clemson? That's where I'm going to make my – I'll give you a couple scenarios, because that's probably a team that's going to look for a head coach.
Well, if they're going to look for one, he's the one to look for, because
right.
they got.
Let's say Houston
lead.
Offers.
Right.
That's my point. Houston offers Dabo Swinney the head coaching job. Is he better in Houston or is he better in Clemson?
I would argue he's better in Clemson.
I would argue that. So, the New York Jets.
That one's tough. I want to say Clemson, but at the same time, I think that New York
is a big enough market.
I think New York's a big enough. Yeah, I think it's a big enough market that you can get players to come play there.
Right.
And I also think that so like in the offseason, you definitely could sign some guys.
Right.
But I also think that they have some pretty decent young talent already there.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That they've been and they're going to draft well this season too.
Right.
So that one's a little trickier.
Okay.
That one I would.
I've got two more.
Okay.
But,
all right.
And one I know. I pretty much know the answer. And I don't think this first team, or this next team I'm going to give you, fires their coach. But Detroit, is he better in Detroit or is he better in Clemson?
I'd say Clemson.
I'd say Clemson too.
Because, I mean, you got to figure who else is in that division.
Exactly.
You know?
You got Chicago, you've got Green Bay, yeah. And you have
Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah, I ain't going to that division.
I'm not either. If I'm Dabo Sweeney, I'm not. Yeah. I mean, if you offered me right now, me the job, yeah, I'm going. I'm going to Detroit. Yeah, I'm going to make the money.
No brainer.
You know?
But, no, I'm, yeah.
Last team. All right. And this one's very interesting to me because of how they drafted last year. The Jags. Jacksonville.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Cincinnati. I was like, Cincinnati all day.
No. Jacksonville.
Because there is a lot of speculation that Urban's going to leave.
Well, I mean, we're going down a rabbit hole. But, I mean, just for argument's sake, I think you're right. I think he is out, whether it be an organizational or a mutual parting of ways.
That's interesting because there's another Clemson prospect down there that he, you know.
There's two.
Two with ETN too.
Right.
I was saying about just the quarterback because, you know, the quarterback is
the big issue for
right. franchise.
Right.
That's interesting. That's one I hope to not see. Although I hope to not see Urban either, and that's been a dumpster fire. So I thought he was going to be really good.
I did too.
I don't know. That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Dabo's future. I do think Dabo's that Jacksonville Clemson is interesting.
I think Jacksonville's a big market, but I don't think that. I think in that state, you're going to be the back seat. You're Miami. To Tampa Bay.
Especially Tampa Bay.
Yeah, especially Tampa Bay right now.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm saying. They got the
greatest best of all time.
Yeah.
They got the GOAT.
Right there. Anyways, so we're.
But you also turn around, and if he does go to Jacksonville, obviously this is all speculation. But he goes in, and I think they are the third best team in that division. Houston is awful. I think Indianapolis' record is like 7-6, so they're a 500 ball team. And then you got the Titans. And it depends on what happens with King Henry.
Yeah, now I mean, I agree. Our division is one of the weakest divisions in the NFL.
Oh, the weakest division is NFC East. That's the weakest division, in my opinion. And I'm a Cowboys fan, but I'll tell you right now, that is the weakest division in football.
Yeah, well.
Between the Eagles, the Eagles and the Giants and Washington.
Well, anyways. I don't like talking about this NFL. I get off this
crap. But it does relate to what we're talking about with Dabo and whether he goes or not. And I know we went down rabbit.
It makes you wonder, though, because the dynasty does look to be done. I mean, it's D-O-N.
I wouldn't say it's done.
I don't see.
I would argue it's at a tipping point.
Here's my – okay, if we were already at a 12-team playoff, then – Clemson's in the playoff. You know, they're making the playoff.
Not this year. No, but not this generally.
Year. Not this year. But generally, I'm saying they're back. And they're more often than not going to make it. But I have to feel like with the coaching changes that have happened.
Right.
The future does not look well for – does not look great for Clemson to make it back into a 4-team playoff. Because the SEC is just getting better and better and better.
I agree.
All of a sudden, Harbaugh has cracked through the glass ceiling.
Right.
Michigan looks like they're going to compete.
Right.
USC has invested their money.
Mm-hmm.
Miami has invested their money.
Which we're fixing to talk about.
And then if this other name, if Oregon does what it looks like they could do.
Right.
It doesn't look good for Clemson to make a 4-team playoff. A 12-team playoff, yes. A 4-team playoff, it doesn't look good.
Right.
And honestly, my dark horse, the guy we have harped on him and really gave him a lot of grief, but I look for Florida State. They're so young. I look for Norvell and Florida State to actually make some noise in the ACC next year.
They're
very young, and they have good recruits coming in. They're one of the biggest brands in college football.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Even when they're down. So I don't know. I just think in a 4-team playoff, it gets difficult, especially losing that much. But that's just my two cents.
I do agree. And my final point on this is the water is very murky in Clemson. The dynasty is not done, in my opinion.
That sucker's thick.
It is at a tipping point, and Dabo, to a point, can controls his own destiny. But if there was ever a time for him to leave and make the jump to the NFL, he might. And it would depend on, like I said, depending on the job.
Right.
The job was right, and he felt like he could be successful, he would do it. Now, I'll also follow that up by saying this. Nick Saban doesn't have long left in Alabama. I think he signed a 6-year extension. You know, I could see the same path for Dabo that
right.
Nick Saban took. Go to the NFL for a couple years, maybe not work out. Maybe work out, maybe not. Alabama job comes open and he takes it. That's just my final point on that.
That would be interesting.
That would be
very
interesting. That's I'm glad I said it on air. That way I have a recording in case it does happen.
Yeah.
I can say I was right.
Yeah, I need to save that clip.
Anyways, moving on to Miami, which we just touched on. Hired Cristobal from Oregon. And it was a big hire. Did he play at Miami? Is that right? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe he was.
He has ties to Miami, I know. But I don't know if he was a former player.
Maybe. I may be thinking of another player or another former player. But I thought Mario Cristobal was kind of following that same line as Mark Richt. I thought he was on like the Schnellenberger.
Right.
Am I saying Coach Schnellenberger's name right? Schnellenberger. During the 80s, I think. I'm going to look that up while we're talking about it. I'm pretty sure he played
I don't
Miami.
Know if his age matches up with that, but I could be wrong.
I may be wrong. I may be thinking of somebody else. But right. I thought he played at
Miami. I
thought
Cristobal was about 42, which would put him
no.
right about.
He is 51.
Oh. Oh, no. It was Tony Elliott that I seen that was the age.
I'm pulling this up right now. He played at Miami from 89 to 92.
Okay.
So actually, that was probably the Dennis Erickson era.
I think you're right. I think that sounds about right.
It was. He played for Jimmy Johnson, too. He played for Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson.
Okay.
Okay. So.
But I think Miami made a great hire. They also got a great hire with their AD. The one they pulled from Clemson that we talked about. And I'm not going to try to mention that guy's name again because I know I'm going to butcher it. I think they're doing a lot of good things in Miami. Time will tell what will happen. But this also goes back to Clemson. Miami making a good hire, especially in the AD and the head coach.
Right.
Norvell doing what he's doing. Muddies the water for Clemson a little more. But I think it was a great hire for Miami. I think it gets them back on track. I don't know if they're competitive in the ACC year one.
Yeah.
But I can see them year two or year three being a lot better. Maybe even nationally ranked.
I think it was a good hire. I think it was a dirty hire. The way they went about it was so
dirty.
It was dirty, so
not for Cristobal, but it was dirty for Manny Diaz.
I kind of put blame on Cristobal too, though. I mean, if you're willing, it's kind of like, and I'm going to use this. This is a very poor analogy to use on air, but I'm going to use this analogy just because it's the best way I can think to do it. In my opinion, it's like this: if you are a single man and you're fooling around with a married woman,
Oh my goodness!
Guys, this is the best example I got here.
He's not. He
You're
wasn't
just
single
as guilty.
He wasn't single at the time. He was.
He was married. It makes it even worse.
Too.
It makes it even worse. But my point though is that, we're probably gonna lose some viewers over this because guys, I ain't judging nobody's business. Anyway,
hey, there might be judgment coming from that side of the table. I'm not judging.
Anyways, it's a good analogy though. Because he's just as guilty. He knew what he was doing. He knew that they were in a prior commitment. They had made Diaz. And because it was so... Miami basically came out and said, okay, you have until Monday to decide. And if you don't take it, then we're going to roll with made Diaz. Does that not just sound like... I mean, that's like, well, I'm gonna leave my husband. I just need to get off this analogy.
No, you've already started it.
I've already
started. Go down.
But I'm just saying, like, he's just as much at fault as Miami. It's just as bad for him. But, man, my thing is this, too. You know, who's to say they don't do that to you down the road? I would never.
Exactly.
If it was me, I would never go work for a place that'd be willing to do that. Because if they're
exactly.
willing to do that for me, they're willing to do that to me.
Exactly.
You know?
And that was my argument last week with Lincoln Riley, if you remember.
Yeah, it was.
Is, you know,
if he's willing to do that for you, then he's willing to do it to you. And exactly. I agree. I totally agree. And so that's my biggest thing is that it really looked poor on Miami. I think it looked poor on both parties. I think it showed his true character. It showed Miami's true character, which may be why they're a match made in heaven. And maybe why Lincoln Riley and USC is a match made in heaven. But, you know, it's
the dirty, dirty business of the coaching carousel.
It's very dirty.
What got and, me was how Manny Diaz found out. That's what was dirty to me about it.
He was on the recruiting trail.
He was
doing his job, trying to make that program a better place,
right.
Trying to get talk kids into coming to the U, and they didn't reward him with, thank you for, you know, for what you, I mean, and let's look at this, too. Let's think about
this. They didn't fire him and then do a coaching search.
I would have so much more respect for them if they had fired him. And again, I'm going back to that analogy. If you ain't happy with your spouse, divorce, and then go find somebody else. Don't look while you're married. That's, you know, I'm just saying. It's the best analogy that I can give. It's the truth.
I'm not saying the analogy is wrong.
It's the perfect analogy.
I was just not ready for that curveball.
No, that's what I do.
I don't think our listeners are going to be ready for that curveball.
No, they're not going to be ready for it. But it's you have to agree with it.
I agree.
But it's just, I tell you what, though. Here's my thing. Though, here's the last point, and we're moving on because we're spending too much time on it. If I'm Dabo Swinney, I'm going after Manny Diaz. If I'm Manny Diaz, I'm saying I'll be there tomorrow,
right.
And I'm giving Miami everything I got.
Right. The Peyton Manning treatment. Right.
Yeah.
The story from whenever he was being interviewed for the number one overall pick or whatever, and he told the Colts owner, and I can't think of it, Ursay.
Oh.
And he said, if you don't take me number one overall, I'm gonna beat you for the next 15 years. You know, that was his message. That's what he told him.
I've never heard that story.
Yeah, he's like, maybe the next 10 years or whatever. But he's like, I'll beat you for the next 10 years if you don't take me number one overall.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, that was one of the, you know, I guess one of the reasons they took him one overall and not, I can't think of the guy's name, the big bust that went
overall
from Washington State.
Washington State, yeah. Oh, man.
Wasn't Leach. It was, I'm talking about Coach Leach.
Oh, shoot.
Ryan Leaf,
yeah, that was it. Yeah.
I had a brain fart.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got it.
But yeah, that's my take on it. And then,
right, again, I absolutely agree.
I guess I need to, you know, guess I'm not judging. I'm not judging nobody's business.
We're moving on, Jesse, from that analogy. Anyway. You've had some great analogies, by the way, on the show. And that
I feel like I've had some good analogies, actually.
I'm agreeing. I'm saying you've had some great analogies.
I heard some sarcasm in your voice with that. But
no. You've had some great analogies.
I have.
And there's been times you've really shocked me with how well your analogies transfer. And then that one,
man, that would shock
it was myself. Correct. It was just not what I was expecting.
Well,
I couldn't
think of a better one. But anyway.
Well, you're not wrong. Anyways, moving on. With Cristobal leaving Oregon to go to Miami, that opened up the Oregon job. Mm-hmm. And an Oregon job is very intriguing to me because of the money that goes into that program, mainly from Nike.
Right.
And then you threw up a name right before we started recording, and I'd heard it, but I really didn't know if there was any truth to it. I absolutely agree.
I think it's a done deal.
I think it is, too. I think it's... all with the, you know, the ink is on the paper, is Chip Kelly going to Oregon from UCLA. And, you know, we was talking about it off air. That hire makes a lot of sense on a lot of different areas. Especially the fact that Lincoln Riley just got hired at USC. Mm-hmm. UCLA does not put a whole lot of money into their football program. Not like USC does.
No, especially they're not a basketball
like,
school.
Especially not, absolutely. Especially not like Oregon does.
Right.
Chip Kelly has ties to Oregon. So he would still be staying in the Pac-12. But he is not going to be recruiting within the same city with less funding.
Right.
Against Lincoln Riley, who is a proven winner, even if it was in the Big 12.
I think you're exactly right. I think it's a slam dunk hire if they can manage to work this out.
Right.
For both parties, I think it's a slam dunk for Chip Kelly, it's a slam dunk for Oregon, because automatically you're going to a program that's better set up than what you've been able to do at UCLA for the last 4 years. And that's no slap to Chip Kelly. It's just the fact that, you know, it is what it is. You know, UCLA is very prestigious, very, you know, a very big brand, but they're more well-known for basketball.
Right.
You know.
What's the same analogy that you can make for, you know, for us to understand is Vandy versus UT.
Yeah.
Vandy is more known as a baseball school.
Right.
Knoxville is more known for football.
Right.
Vandy is not going to put the funding that they do into baseball that they do football.
Right.
Or I said that backwards. Into football that they would with baseball.
Right.
And vice versa for Tennessee in baseball versus football. And, you know, it's the same analogy. UCLA is going to put the money into basketball because that's what they're known for.
Right.
The football program is going to get money. You know, it's not like they're poor or whatever, but you're in the same town as USC, who does put the money to football.
Yeah.
Not so much to basketball.
Right, I agree.
And Oregon is going to put the money to football.
Oh, yeah. And one of the thing is, imagine how much better that conference gets if he goes to Oregon, because you're think about the attention it gets is what I was trying to say.
Right.
Because as soon as he goes to Oregon, back to Oregon. And by the way, the last time he was at Oregon was 14 his last year or 15 his last year?
I can't remember, because he spent time with the Eagles and the pros.
Yeah.
I want to say he spent 3 years there and four years at UCLA. So, yeah, that would put 7 years.
Oregon played in the very first college football playoff with Mariota as their quarterback. Chip Kelly was a head coach.
Jamichael Hasty. Was it Jamichael Hasty? No, it was
The running back?
They had two running backs. That was really good.
They had one that was
Michael James.
Michael James
is who I'm thinking about.
Royce Freeman was one, wasn't he? Or was that after?
I don't remember.
I remember he was a good one. He ended up, I think he might still be in the league, actually.
He is. I think he plays for Tampa Bay. I think.
But anyways, my point to that, though, is that you have a proven winning head coach that you can bring in there, a proven championship winning head coach, because he won, I don't know how many, Pac-12 championships. Good grief. He won a few, didn't he? He locked down the Pac-12.
He may have been in a national title at some point.
He
before.
Did.
But in the BCS
he
era.
He did the first. No. He did. He was in 2010. You're right.
Yeah.
He went again and played Cam Newton. And probably actually should have won that game. Some things just didn't go their way. But then he went back in 2014 and beat FSU. Remember they had the James
like
Winston?
A drum.
Yeah, thumped them. Yeah. And
they
then,
scored 60 or 70 points.
Who was
that
the team they played? It was Ohio State. It was
because
Elliott.
that was the interview that Urban Meyer was at. He was sitting there, and they obviously, I think we mentioned this on our podcast before, was the early game was Oregon game. And I think you're right. I think it was FSU. And they beat them like 70-14 or whatever. And Urban Meyer didn't know the score. So they sit down. They're doing this post-game interview. They're fixing it. You know, they just won their game to go to the national title. And somebody said, did you hear the score of the Oregon game? He's like, oh, no, it wasn't on our radar. You know, that game is what it is. Well, we're worried about us. And they said, well, they won 70-14. And he joking goes, oh, man, I got to get out of here. And they acted like he was getting out of his seat. Like, are you kidding me? They scored that many points? So,
yeah.
That was the interview I was talking about.
Yeah, I remember that game was they dominated FSU. FSU didn't have a chance. But Oregon already has athletes. Cristobal proved that this season. Mario Cristobal recruited that place very well. Like, that place is loaded.
And I don't
Chip
know how
Kelly
many people
walks
have,
in day one.
Have they had anybody enter the transfer portal? I haven't seen
not
any
that I know of. If Thibodeau's graduating, right?
I think he might be a junior, but if I'm him, I'm going pro.
They have a lot of pieces that he goes in day one. They're the favorite of the Pac-12.
And I think the thing is,
with this though, here's my thing too, here's my argument here. Lincoln Riley comes to USC, him and Chip Kelly are neck and neck. Okay, day one.
Right.
And Chip Kelly's been there for 4 years doing all this recruiting and but they're right there day one.
I agree.
Chip Kelly goes to Oregon, he's up here. And Lincoln
where he should be. Where he should be.
Yes, he should be ahead of him. And the only reason for that is because Oregon has been more of a consistent recruiting And it's not, again, it's not a knock on Chip Kelly. It's just the fact that Oregon is just a bigger football brand than UCLA.
Absolutely. That was my point earlier. And I think the reason you've not seen any news from the transfer portal from Oregon to this point
is
the kids are waiting to see who they hire. And I think if they hire Chip Kelly, who's, like I said, we said is a home run hire, slam dunk hire, however you want to put it, they stay. They don't leave. Because they automatically see, hey, we're going to probably be right where we was at when we left off.
No knock to Kyle Whittingham, no knock to Marco Cristobal. But I think if Chip Kelly is there, I think let's say Utah beats them one time. They don't beat them twice.
I agree.
They don't beat them twice.
I agree, 100%. And I almost wonder if Cristobal had checked out in the second game.
It's possible.
But anyways, one of the other names that I had seen mentioned, but I don't know that he goes, and I think it's a home run hire if he does, was Lane Kiffin. But I don't see.
I was gonna throw
that name out there.
Yeah, that's a good hire, but he ain't going nowhere.
No.
If he was gonna go anywhere, he would have threw his hat in the LSU job or the Florida job. He ain't going anywhere.
I could see him going to LSU. I don't know if he would have went to Florida, just because of the culture.
Yeah.
You know, LSU is a bigger brand. We've already talked about that, or at least I think that is. I think you think Florida was a bigger job, but
I kind of do. But I have other reasons though why I think that. But that's another
discussion for another day. Anyway, so we're gonna move on, and I've got the college football playoff wrote down, and then I want to talk about the Alabama Georgia game. First thing I'm gonna talk about, and we talked about off air, and I get really upset when I talk about this.
Oh, here, yeah. I'm excited about this.
This happened in the ACC title game.
Yeah.
Early in the game. I think it was first quarter. It was 14-7, I think.
I think so. I didn't get to watch all that game. I watched bits and pieces.
I did too, but I do know this happened in the first quarter. The score is, I might be wrong. But Kenny Pickett takes off out of the pocket. Protection breaks down. It was actually a pass play. Takes off running. Gets to probably about the 20, 25. And two or three defenders are converging on him, and he fakes a slide. He acts like he's going down. Defenders pull up. He takes off, scores a touchdown. And that, to me, is asking for trouble, not only for Kenny Pickett, but for any running or any quarterback that decides to take off down the field.
Yeah, I saw a tweet.
I know you're on the fence. So I want to hear
I'm on the fence. But I saw a tweet, though, maybe I heard about the tweet. I can't remember. I heard there was a comment made that said Kenny Pickett just got every quarterback killed next week or something to that effect.
Right.
Just because of, you know, like you said, defenders can't slow up anymore.
Right.
Because if they do, they're gonna get burnt. That was my takeaway as a coach was I'm mad at that DB because he stopped when he stuck Kenny Pickett and he hesitates for like just a second.
Right.
But when he stops, the defender is, I want to say in that clip, when he stops, the defender's around 7 yards away.
And one of them was. One was close.
No, one was right there. One was close enough that he still should have made the tackle even after he stopped.
Well, but he pulled up.
Yeah, they both pulled up.
Because they thought he was sliding.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know. That's just
you can't
but
touch
my takeaway though
touch the
is
quarterback
the,
when he slides.
The DB that's 7 yards in front of him, how do you allow him to still get around you? That's my thing is for one, you don't ever completely stop. You make sure he's down because here's the thing. Let's say he's going down and that ball spits out. You should be on that football. If you stop, somebody else has an opportunity to get that ball. That's just my takeaway as a coach. But now, I totally get, guys, don't think I'm defending the fake slide. I'm not defending the fake slide because I do think that it opens up a whole can of worms that we don't want to get into. I think by allowing the fake slide, you make things because things are already hard enough for a defender.
That's my point with targeting,
and I think by allowing the fake slide, you do get in that gray area of, okay, well, you know, what happens if he slides and I hit him, you know?
Exactly.
And, you know, so there's really no repercussion. It's almost like a win-win situation for the ball carrier.
Exactly.
And a lose-lose situation for the defender because, okay, I slow down. Well, he can decide to take off again, and I'm toasted. Or I keep going, and he does go down. And because, I mean, I'm open to hear both. I want to hear both arguments because I like hearing arguments. I like hearing people's
points of view. Because here's my argument for the other side of this is if you go ahead and you go full force into him,
yeah,
because he might fake slide, and he goes down and you pop him good. I mean, I'm not saying it's a dirty hit, but you hit him hard. You hit him like you should have tackled him if he was a running back. You're going to get called for targeting. More than likely, because you're leading into a guy that's going down at this point, or might be going down. You're out of the game. You're ejected, or you give up a score.
Right.
That's your. I'd rather give up the score. Defenders are going to, you know, I don't want to go full force into this guy and get thrown out of a game. But then again, I do not want to give up the score. You know what I'm saying?
I do feel like though.
Because you're getting chewed out by your coach on the sideline.
Right.
You give it up.
Again,
I'm sure those guys
do. I'm chewing my guys.
Right.
If they give that up, I'm chewing them. Right. I don't care if he fake slide. If he had a fake slide, I'm chewing them.
Right.
But my thing, though, is, and again, I'm not defending the slide, but if we don't want this in the game, which I don't feel like we want this in the game, a rule needs to be made and needs to be put in place for that to happen.
Right.
Our jobs, and I'm talking about coaches, players, as competitors, is to find ways to give ourselves the most competitive advantage.
I get it.
And do I think it was? I heard a lot of people saying it was soft. I don't really know that it's soft. I think that, you know, it's like, okay, I'm gonna make another analogy here, example. Okay. And I'm not even I'm a basketball guy. I'm a Tennessee basketball guy. I'm a Chicago Bulls basketball guy. But that's it. I don't dive more into basketball than that. College football, I'm all college football. But I just watch my teams in basketball.
Right.
In the NBA, you know, Dwayne Wade made his money on the free throw line by doing the pump fake and then getting people off the ground and then jumping into him for a shot.
Right.
People used to call that soft.
It is soft.
And I I'm not defending either way. And I'm listening to everybody's points of view, and I'm cool with it. But in my opinion, it's smart. It's finding loopholes in the game
right.
to get yourself because your objective is to score points.
I get
as
it.
An athlete, your objective is to win games to score points. If you're telling me that there's no rule against pump faking and then getting you off your feet and then you know getting myself to the line and I'm able to do that and there's no repercussion. And I'm going to be able to get points out of that. Why wouldn't you take advantage?
Right. I get that.
And Kenny Pickett, I feel like, and any other quarterback that ends up doing this, until a rule's put in place, that's just something that we're going to have to live with.
Anyway.
But that's why I'm saying a rule needs to be put in place. Because I don't think it should be in football. I think that it puts the defenders at a disadvantage that they're already at.
And your defender's job is to stop them from scoring.
I agree. And so a rule needs to be put in place.
So when you have a person that decides, hey, I'm a running back, because that's what he decided
exactly.
to do. He decided I'm a running back.
Right.
You're at the same mercy.
Right.
And I don't care if you decide to slide.
And you're
putting yourself at risk. Even if a guy hits you, you know, if you go to slide and the guy's coming at an angle and hits you on the shoulder pad and you go down and your head pops the turf. And
right.
you're a concussion, you're out.
Right.
That defender was doing exactly what he needed to do.
Right.
And you know, fake slide. Defenders are I don't care. I'm running through your ribcage right now.
In my opinion, the only time that it should ever be a flag should ever pop out is a helmet to helmet contact. That is the only time that I feel like, I don't mean shoulder to helmet. I mean true helmet to helmet.
You launch
face mask on.
You launch
him like a torpedo with the crown of your helmet.
Right. And there's times that you see the targeting call and you're going. That's questionable. And there's times you see the targeting call for exactly what it is.
Right.
They launch with the crown of the helmet.
Right.
Forcible blow to the, and it should be, to the, and I agree with you.
Right.
To the other guy's helmet.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah. You know, you go, okay, that's targeting. 100%.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Right.
So with Kenny Pickett faking that slide, he put himself at risk, not just for his bowl game,
uh-huh.
but for his NFL career, because NFL guys are going to go, nope, not going to have that.
Right.
You know, you're going to take a good shot.
Yeah. But that's my take on it, is that if we don't want to enter the game, put a rule in place.
Right.
And until a rule's put in place, I don't have a problem with seeing
Whenever you start the I'm giving myself up motion.
Right.
You're dead there.
Yeah.
That's the ball.
And see, I don't have a problem with that either. I agree
that there should be a rule because you're going to get somebody hurt.
Exactly.
That's my argument. You're going to get somebody hurt because the defenders are going to say, nope, screw it. I'm going through you.
Oh, yeah. And they
if
should.
If I get a targeting call, I get a targeting call.
Right. And any good defensive coach should say, no, listen, you see this clip, you don't stop. You go.
Right.
And
we'll deal with the consequences of that.
Exactly.
I mean,
and that's our job as coaches, is to defend our players. So,
yeah.
I think that, you know, and I'm sure every coach would agree they would do the same. But, anyways, so that's my
moving off. I'm not for it. Anyways, so one game, the only game that I want to talk about was the Alabama Georgia game, because we all thought
there was no chance. Well, I didn't think there was no chance. I thought that it might be a close game.
Odds were stacked against Alabama for many views of it. And now I think they lost their best receiver, Mechie, in the game.
It didn't matter.
They
lost him early.
No, the game was, I think, tied.
But, I mean, like, they lost him before halftime.
Right. But I think Alabama was either tied or already up at that point.
Yeah.
So.
But, I mean,
they lost him going forward into the playoffs.
Yeah.
So they won't have him. As it gives them a disadvantage. But I don't think anybody really seen Alabama scoring 41. That's my point.
No.
Nobody's seen. Everybody thought, you know, Alabama, yeah, they have a chance because they're Alabama, because they have Nick Saban, because they have a great coaching staff and great recruits, and a Heisman front runner at quarterback.
Right.
A great running back in Robinson, who I didn't think was going to play but did. You know, John Mechie, who's a first-round talent in the NFL draft.
No doubt.
So, I didn't, even with all of that, I thought they have a chance to win the game. I did not see them scoring 41 points.
No, I didn't see them scoring 41. I didn't see it. Georgia's offense, we talked about how kind of stagnant their offense has been.
At times, but yes.
I didn't see it looking that bad.
No.
It was awful.
It was pretty bad.
Terrible. And I was kind of blown away by it. But I'm pulling up these stats right now. I'm pretty sure. Let's see if I can see. When exactly did Mechie go out? Do you remember?
I don't.
Because I thought it was before halftime.
I thought it was third quarter.
And I could be wrong. But I'm just pull these stats, and just to show, like, I mean, the Alabama offense, they pick up the slack. And especially a man by the name of Jameson Williams, he definitely picked up the slack. Jameson Williams. Well, okay, so John Mechie had 6 catches for 97 yards and a touchdown. Which is crazy stat line.
When was the touchdown? You might not have it. When was the touchdown score?
I don't have the touchdown. That's why I wish I had that, but I don't have the touchdown.
Okay.
Well,
you go ahead. I'm going to look it up.
Okay. Jameson Williams had 7 catches for 184 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Slade Bolden had 5 catches for 54 yards. Jaleel Billingsley had 2 catches for 27 yards. And then their rushing game. Brian Robinson carried the ball 16 times for 55 yards. Bryce Young carried the ball 3 times for 40 yards and a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Which he broke one.
Yeah, he had one that he busted.
Right.
But my only thing was that, like, they didn't have John Mechie on the field. And their offense was still moving the ball on the best defense in the country.
Right.
And so I was thoroughly impressed with Alabama's performance. And
oh, yeah.
I don't really want to put the cart before the horse and say that Cincinnati has no chance, because I feel like every time that's said, you know, like, I think back to 2008 when Alabama lost to Florida in the SEC title game, they ended up in the Sugar Bowl against Utah. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, oh, you know, Utah ain't got a chance. They got a shot in the dark. And Utah ended up going in there and beating them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. The same thing happened in 14 when Alabama was just rolling and they ended up getting matched up with an Ohio State team that a lot of people thought shouldn't even be there. And Ohio State just embarrassed them in the same stadium, actually, in that Sugar Bowl stadium.
Right.
And so I don't really want to say, you know, it's over. But at the same time, as good as Alabama looked against Georgia, good grief. If they can do that.
Right.
Bet
you score with 9.5 left in the second quarter.
Okay, so.
So he probably went out. You're probably right.
I feel like it was before half.
You're probably right.
But anyway, and at half, it was a, 24-17 ball game?
Yeah.
And they ended up.
An early fourth quarter, Stetson Bennett threw a pick six.
Right.
Which made the score, I think, 17-31.
Right.
Or maybe even 30, maybe even more than that. That might have been the nail in the coffin.
But if they did, which I think that they played the whole half, second half without Mitchie. But they scored 17 without Mitchie.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people are like, that's not much. That's on a defense like that, that's all right.
But didn't you also have to go into the game planning and, you know, all of a sudden that changes when Mitchie goes out.
Right.
You know, so teams that can kind of game plan, they know for a fact he's not going to be out there is different.
Yeah, that's true.
But,
okay. I don't know, I feel like we're knocking. I'm knocking Cincinnati when I talk, but I can't think that Cincinnati's defense is going to be as good as Georgia's defense.
No,
I just can't believe that it would be.
I'm just, it's going to be interesting. That matchup is very interesting. If I was betting, I don't know the line. I'd probably take Alabama to cover.
I think it ended up landing around 13.5.
Well, then that'll change. I mean, we're still ways out from
right.
that game.
Oh yeah,
but I'm probably taking Alabama to cover. But this is the year for a group of five to prove that they should be in it. Now, I'm not saying Cincinnati has to win the game to prove that a group of five needs to be in it, but they need to be in the game. They need to be in the game late in the fourth with a chance, or at least close.
Within 10. Like they did last year in the Peach Bowl against Cincinnati, or I mean Georgia.
Right. There needs to be a close game.
Right.
For the argument for a group of five to be there. That's my point.
I agree.
The other game that we have in the College Football Playoff is, and I really am excited about this one, is Michigan and Georgia.
I am excited about that one. I think that's the best. I honestly don't think that's the best game.
Favorite.
I don't. Well, a lot of people have said that they're not, but I think that's the best game in the bowl season.
I agree.
I think that is the best matchup.
Mm-hmm.
But
I agree 100%.
I mean. That's going to be interesting. I think both defenses are very good.
Yes.
I think they're very good.
I agree.
And
both teams run the ball very well.
They do.
And the only suspect part is their passing game for both teams.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they're both very similar in their build and their play style. And even their coaches are similar.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm not even sure how to – I'm sure we're going to pick that game when we get closer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know which way I'm leaning right now.
I don't either.
Part of me wants to say that Georgia's going to come out more fired than ever. Yeah.
Mad. Play pissed off. Yeah, so, I agree. That's where if they wouldn't have taken the beating that they did from Alabama, say Georgia's won, Michigan's 4.
Right.
Let's just say that was the matchup we got. Same matchup in the first round. But Georgia's coming off their SEC title game win. Over Alabama, I would be more inclined to take Michigan.
Yeah,
but a pissed off Georgia team. I don't know if that I want any part of that. I'm gonna move on from that. And the last thing, unless you have anything else in this, I know you're looking something up.
Oh, I was looking at so many scores and stuff from last week and things. But no, I don't have anything else.
Okay, so the last thing I want to talk about is the Heisman finalists were announced.
Right.
We're going to give you guys our favorites and maybe the one that should, in our opinions, deserve it.
I'm kind of confused a little bit by it. So the finalists that they announced were Bryce Young, Kenny Pickett, C.J. Stroud, and Aiden Hutchinson, the defensive end from Michigan.
Right.
And am I the only one that feels like the Heisman is just a popularity contest?
Yep.
Because
then that's why I say deserves versus going to win.
Right. Because I'll be honest. Well, I don't know. Okay, so Bryce Young does have good stats, but I don't feel like that every finalist on this list is deserving of even being there. I kind of feel like, and I know I'm going to catch a lot of flack, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to disagree with me, which is okay. I mean, I'm cool with that. I don't feel like C.J. Stroud deserves to be there.
Oh, I think he deserves to be there. I mean, well, and he's here's
my point. Here's my point. Where do you think, in the top 10, where do you think that C.J. Stroud ranks among the other quarterbacks as far as passing stats in college football?
Oh, man, the way you say that makes me want to say 8th.
Dang, you need to go buy you a lottery ticket. 8th exactly. 8th exactly. Kenny Pickett landed at 5. Bryce Young landed at 4. I mean, these guys aren't even – Kenny Pickett's not even in the top 4 for passing yards in college football.
Wow.
Now, granted, the other quarterbacks – well, two of the other quarterbacks don't play the level of competition that any of the 3 play.
Right.
Brandon Armstrong is the quarterback at Virginia. He has 4,444 yards.
Right.
31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Bailey Zappe. he is a quarterback at Western Kentucky, and I imagine, you know, stats galore. He has 5,545 yards.
Oh, my gosh.
56 touchdowns, 11 interceptions.
That's
but
crazy.
Here's where I'm going to start arguing some stuff, though. So, C.J. Stroud has 3,862 yards and 38 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Okay. Will Rogers is number 2 on this list. He has 4,449 yards, 35 touchdowns, 8 interceptions.
Right.
He has 3 more interceptions and 3 less touchdowns than C.J. Stroud. But he has, what, close to 700 more yards in passing.
Yeah.
And he's done it against tougher competition.
Right.
You know, and yes, Ohio State's played Michigan.
Right.
Yes, they've played Michigan State, which is on their defense. Penn State's defense is pretty decent.
Right.
But Will Rogers competed with Alabama, LSU, Ole Miss, Auburn. Much tougher defenses, in my opinion.
Right.
And another one that I feel like is actually even more deserving is Sam Hartman. He wasn't even a finalist.
Right.
And he also had better stats than C.J. Stroud. He had 36 touchdowns. Now his interceptions was probably what kept him out of it. He had 14 interceptions, but he also led a team, Wake Forest, that if he's not there, they're probably not having the season that they had.
I agree.
And here's another argument I have about C.J. Stroud.
Right.
Name another quarterback in this country in NCAA that has a Chris Olave, a Garrett Wilson, and a Jackson Smith enigma. There isn't one.
Right.
All two of those guys have over 1,000 yards, and Chris Olave has 936. He's right there at 1,000, close to 1,000 yards. There are no other.
What does Alabama's receivers have?
I'd have to look it up, but let's see.
That's my only other point, and then we're getting close to the hour mark.
Right.
I'll
look that up while you're going to make your.
Okay, so your argument. So for me, the and I agree 100%. It is a popularity contest.
It's also a quarterback.
Quarterback driven.
We've gotten away from it being the best player in college football. And it slowly shifted to
the best quarterback.
The best quarterback.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not even
the best quarterback. It's the best quarterback on the best team. I don't think that I think it should be what it's supposed to be. The player that means the most to college football, or the player that means the most to their team.
I 100%
if he's
agree.
Not there, they're not this. Right. They're not that. And another dude that I'm going to throw out there that's not a finalist is who we all thought would be a finalist is Kenneth Walker. Kenneth Walker's not Michigan State, they're not ever a top 10 team.
I would argue that the Hartman kid is more deserving on a finalist than Pickett.
I would too. I would totally agree.
But I agree 100%. But and this goes into exactly what you're saying. The best player or the quarterback on the best team.
Right.
And I think that's going to be the winner. I think it's going to be Bryce Young.
Right.
I think that he's going to walk away with it, and I think he's going to walk away convincingly.
Yeah.
And I think the guy that is going to end up receiving probably the least amount of votes, but the most deserving out of the finalists, is the defensive end, Hutchinson, from Michigan. That's who I think deserves the win. I think he has 14 sacks on the year.
Yeah.
I mean, that he is the anchor on the defensive line for Michigan. And the Michigan defensive line is very good. They are across the board, both tackles, both ends are very good, and he is the best of them, and it's not even close how close they are to him. And the rest of them are studs themselves.
Right.
He is the anchor for a Michigan defense that's the reason that they're in the college football playoffs is because of their defense. It's not because of their offense. He is the most deserving player out of the finalists. Probably will receive the fourth most, or you know, he'll probably end up fourth as far as the votes go. But for me, he's the most deserving. That's where I would draw the line. Bryce Young, in my opinion, is going to win.
Well,
I think it'll go in that order: Bryce Young, Stroud, Pickett, and then Hutchinson. That's what my opinion.
If it goes to a quarterback, Bryce Young's the most deserving quarterback of the three.
Right.
In my opinion, I mean, his stats are better than the other two.
Right.
And he's spread the ball around better than the other two, and in my opinion. And you want to ask about the receivers. I have the receivers pulled up. So again, going back to CJ Stroud. C.J. Stroud has three receivers close to or above 1,000 yards. He's got two receivers that are well over 1,000 yards and one that is very close to 1,000. And then the next closest receiver on the list is at 285. He's looking for those three guys. I mean, those guys are – I mean, all three of those guys would start on any other program in the country.
100% agree.
And, yes – Bryce Young has John Metchie. He has two receivers over 1,000 yards, but then he has a receiver over 300. He has 1, 2, 3, 4 receivers over 200 yards, three receivers over 100 yards, and then 79, 57. It's just consistent all the way down through there.
Right.
CJ
Stroud.
There's
not a cliff. It's a roll.
It's gradually. It is a drop off with CJ Stroud's receivers with Ohio State.
Right.
So. I mean, I agree. I think Hutchinson is, if he's not there, Michigan's defense is not what it is. And I do think that, no knock to Bryce Young, I do think any quarterback really can kind of, well, we saw it, you know, with the quarterbacks in years past at Alabama. Any quarterback really can step in there and lead that offense.
Yeah, but you still have to do it.
I agree. And I'm not, again, like I say, I'm not knocking Bryce Young. Bryce Young is a phenomenal athlete.
Right.
I think he's very deserving. But I do hate that it's become a popularity contest
among
quarterbacks.
100% agree.
You know, it's not the best player. And we need to stop acting like it is. But anyways.
Yeah. They have the best quarterback award for a reason.
Yeah, they do. They have an award for every position.
Right.
So let's get back to making the Heisman what it's supposed to be.
Exactly. The best of the best.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's the same thing in the NFL. NFL's the MVP award is a popularity contest.
So is NFL Comeback Player of the Year.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that because I think Alex Smith won it 2 years ago. And that one was deserving. That one is deserving.
That man looked like he was playing a game on Saw or something. That thing on his leg. Oh, my gosh.
But more times than not, a lot of these awards become a popularity contest.
Yeah, I agree.
And the Heisman is no exception to the rule. It's actually one of the, you know, hey, this is a popularity contest.
Yeah.
And it's dominated by quarterbacks, and you can see it by the finalists.
Right.
Three of the four are quarterbacks. So, but anyways, that's it for me. Is there anything else that you want to add to anything we said? Okay. So, guys, make sure that you guys go check
actually,
us out.
Actually, wait. I do want to add one thing. I forgot about it. We forgot to mention this. Is the Bowl Pick'em Challenge.
Oh, man. How did we miss that?
Yeah. So, should have it by – I think we'll be finished with this by this weekend. That's the goal. That's the plan. But for anybody that that thinks that they, you know, have college football knowledge or they just –
like wants compete. To compete with us.
Yeah, want to compete with us or want to compete with your friends. And did we ever decide on what we were doing for that? The prize?
I don't think we did.
We'll put that out too. There will be a prize. Don't expect like the $1 million cash prize like you see on some of these tournament brackets.
Right.
But there will be a prize for we're just trying to do a top three is what I was thinking, top three leaderboard. But it should be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. We're having every bowl game on there. I think the way we're gonna have it out there is maybe even have a score prediction as a tiebreaker for the championship game.
Right.
The team, the champion, and the score. So should be fun. But be looking for that on Facebook and Twitter, and should have that out by this weekend, real soon.
That's a good segue to what we're doing. I was gonna talk about next. Guys, go check us out on Facebook and Twitter and TikTok. Guys, putting out just information there, just different things. Guys, go check us out. Let us know what you think about the show. Anything that helps, guys, a like, a thumbs up, a little review on your podcast. It helps us out, lets us know what we're that you enjoy what we're doing.
Then we're not wasting our time.
Well, I'm not wasting my time. I enjoy talking about it, yeah. But to have the fan interaction is always nice.
Right.
So, but until next time, guys, appreciate it.